Hello and welcome to another episode of Forkful of Noodles. I'm Krish Mohan. It's always risky to talk politics, especially if you're the socially awkward kid, right? It's never, speaking from experience, it's never a great idea to sit down at a dinner table and when the appetizers come out, ask everybody, so, where's everybody stand on abortion? That's a dessert question, probably, right? And if people get offended and they walk away from the table, bonus, you just snagged yourself some extra dessert. Talking politics has become even more risky these days. In today's climate, politics is being hooked in with one of the most dangerous things that humanity has yet to figure out. Emotions. And when these two things come together, it's easy for us in the public to lose sight of things that actually matter and start squabbling with our emotions fully locked and loaded. This phenomenon of distraction politics is continuing to polarize the populace, and so we don't address any major issues facing society right now. I mean, our emotions have been weaponized against us, so it's easy to toss black or white issues into the mix and ensure that we start a hashtag campaign to show how important they are. Abortion is either the right to choose for a woman or killing babies. I mean, choice is pretty important, but killing babies isn't great. Just ask Job from the Old Testament. But it's not a decision to be made by wrinkly old men sitting in an ivory dome. It's a decision between a woman, her partner, and their doctor. Gay rights is either about equality or destroying marriage. Look, I'm all for equality, but I'm not for destroying the representation of love. And I don't think gay people are either, you know, about destroying marriage, because that's kind of the end goal. But this isn't something that is meant to be legislated by old people that haven't watched porn since 1828. It's for everybody. That's what love is for. Love is for everybody, especially Virginians, which, as record shows, is where love was invented. But this is one of those social issues that is emotionally loaded. And with that said, that's actually has been used against us. Back in 2015, Obama did legalize gay marriage, since he figured, well, Mexico did it, and we should probably be as progressive as Mexico in that regard, right? I mean, if we think that we're better than them, we should probably act on it. And while part of the country was celebrating with parades and floats and rainbows, and another part was pouting and reading the Bible, the Obama administration was looking to pass the Trans-Pacific Partnership, one of the worst globalist trade bills ever written. Right now, the emotional ties are related to whether Russia and Trump colluded together. Did he collude with Russia to take over the government, or just pee on a bed? Or is he trying to make himself look bigger than what he actually is? You know, the same tactic you use against bears in the woods? Or did Russia hack into our election to destroy feminism and increase the sales of vodka globally? Look, if Russia did hack the elections, we'd be to blame, because where do you think they learned that shit from? Philosopher, linguist, and the cause of future depression amongst millions of progressives, Noam Chomsky says that the world is laughing at us because we have planted military dictators, launched coups, created terror, so we have no place to stand on higher ground. All we're really doing with this form of distraction politics is standing up on our tippy toes, trying to look down on the rest of the world. While we talk about Russia hacking our elections, we aren't talking about the fact that the DNC was trying to crush Bernie during the primaries, or the fact that the Republicans are instating programs like CrossCheck, which is removing minority voters, or gerrymandering in states, or the fact that our voting machines are so easy to hack that a Lisa can break into it. For the millennials, the Lisa was what a Mac used to be. I'm not just yelling about my ex Lisa. It's like the OG Mac. But this Russia hack story sends us into a frenzy of emotional chaos where we drive our decisions out of anger. Now blame the third parties, you blame the Bernie supporters, you gotta blame the conservatives, you gotta blame the protest votes, and fuck it, let's blame the bears. As Chomsky says, the Russian hacks of the election and Trump's cabinet talking to Russia isn't that big of a deal. What is a big deal is the fact that Paul Ryan and his Republicans, whom Chomsky has delightfully called the most dangerous and savage organization, are out to destroy the fabric of this country, which should elicit the same level of anger, if not more, than this whole Russia situation still does. And that's something the Republicans should be looking to fix about themselves. I mean, they're no longer practicing evil behind closed doors. It's right there in the open, and somehow they're claiming that they're not evil. They're standing there with an I'm with evil t-shirt with the arrow pointing up at themselves and saying that it's gays and Muslims. I mean, with the climate change denial, the lack of healthcare, and the cultural appropriation of elephants, they're telling the world that money means more than people, and they're proving how dangerous they actually are. Chomsky also says that the media has been enacting the propaganda model for a very long time.
Well, the term propaganda fell into disfavor at the around the Second World War, but in the 1920s and the 1930s, it was commonly used. And in fact advocated, not by leading intellectuals, by the founders of modern political science, by Wilsonian progressives, and of course by the public relations industry, as a necessary technique to overcome the danger of democracy. The institutional structure of the media is quite straightforward. We're talking about the United States, but it's not very different elsewhere. There are sectors, but the agenda-setting media, the ones that sort of set the framework for everyone else, like the New York Times and the Washington Post and so on, these are major corporations, parts of even bigger conglomerates. Like other corporate institutions, they have a product and a market. Their market is advertisers, that is, other businesses. Their product is relatively privileged audiences. More or less.
So they're selling audiences to
They're selling privileged audiences. These are big corporations selling privileged audiences to other corporations.
The media has been one of the leaders in our emotional manipulation for a long time. I mean, they're telling us how we should and shouldn't feel about things rather than helping us make the decisions for ourselves. Then hooking products into those emotions to make sure that we're distracted by a pair of sneakers so that our rights get taken away. They're supposed to objectively tell you the news, but right now it's just the theater of information. The media blows up Trump's tweets and ignores some of the most major stories because he retweeted an inaccuracy about the eclipse. And because we're never taught how to maintain our emotions and not make decisions out of extreme ones, we start with the name-calling and making jokes and the counter-memes. Meanwhile, the sun was literally trying to hide behind the moon to prevent climate change. The media is and has been for the push of corporate agenda, so they missed the mark on shedding the light on the fact that there is a corporate agenda. I mean, the media keeps us distracted with shiny shit. Meanwhile, Jeff Bezos, the CEO of Amazon, is buying up other media sources and food sources. Bezos recently spent a little over $13 billion purchasing Whole Foods. If he would have tried to purchase Trader Joe's, it would have been far cheaper. The speculation is that Amazon has had issues with its grocery sales online. Turns out, people don't like having vegetables shot into their kitchen via drone. With the purchase of Whole Foods, Bezos can now control the distribution of vegetables to local markets without giving people PTSD over plantains. And with the control of the Washington Post, he can use that avenue to push products as people consume the propaganda of the DNC, which gives people PTSD over third parties and the freedom of choice. Bezos is looking to changing the grocery game using Amazon accounts to go shopping. This would involve scanning your phone as you walk into a store, then it picks up on the things you pick up and put into your cart. And it's so intuitive that it knows when you don't want something and put it back on your shelf. Because it's so advanced that it uses the power of suggestion to say, "Go on, Becky. You get that cupcake. You know you want it. Do it." And then you do. It's like Amazon has turned the grocery shopping experience into a psychological game on par with abusive relationships. Now, the Federal Trade Commission and the Justice Department have to oversee this merger. And the Trump-appointed person for this is Mark Bellerim, a former lobbyist for Amazon. On top of which, Ivanka Trump and Jared Kushner are on the board of Amazon. And a former Goldman Sachs COO is helping finance this whole deal. At this point, Jeff Bezos is getting his monopoly over healthy food and the medium that he needs to advertise it, or hand it over to him in a candy dish. A candy dish he probably bought over Amazon. But we should all be really mad and reactive over Trump making another offensive tweet at 3 a.m. But there might be some people in the White House that might be able to get Trump on a regimented schedule. As of late, there have been several generals assigned as the Secretary of Defense, Homeland Security, and the National Security Council. General James Mattis, John Kelly, and H.R. McMaster, respectively. And we would figure that Trump would listen to them, since the only praise the media ever gave him was for a military action. I mean, Brian Williams was on air praising the beauty of our missiles, which is expected from a country that celebrates its freedom by blowing up chunks of it. Some people are excited about this development. I mean, finally, someone puts the kibosh on the chaos in the White House. If we know anything about generals, it's that when they take over an area, they eradicate chaos. As long as nobody opens history textbooks, that remains a fact. This is where everybody's supposed to put on their patriotism glasses. The White House has been in chaos since the beginning of the Trump administration. I mean, he put people in charge of departments they didn't believe in or have tried to dismantle. That's like the administrative equivalent of getting caught smoking and having to smoke the entire carton. On top of that, the controversial executive orders and the defiance to denounce white supremacy and racial tension has spun this administration into an emotional hurricane. The calm comes from the idea that generals are pragmatic and regimented. And sure, when most people come out of the military and come back to civilian life, they are against the war and the military-industrial complex, but not these three generals. In fact, General McMaster has criticized Obama for pulling out of the Middle East to the degree he did. He goes as far to say that that is what created the rise of ISIS. And that would be a fair assessment as long as he criticized the Bush administration for declaring a war that never needed to be declared. General John Kelly, in 2016, cautioned his colleagues not to get involved in the cesspool of domestic politics and said it would be dangerous for a president to think that they'd be getting the best military advice devoid of any politics. That's the current director of Homeland Security. The safety of this country just got political. I mean, that's gotta be an appetizer conversation, right? Come on, get some chicken tenders, talk about the safety of the nation and whether the generals are gonna kill all the immigrants coming in here or not. I mean, that's a conversation for some chicken strips and shrimp poppers. And that's the major issue with this. Generals are going to look for militaristic solutions to domestic problems. Protesters a problem? No problem, let's send out the tanks. And it seems far-fetched, unless you own a television or the internet, then this should come as no surprise. I mean, look at things like Ferguson and Charlottesville, Standing Rock, Washington, D.C., just to name a few. Plus, it shows, if that's what we're willing to do to our citizens, what do you think we're going to do to countries that disagree with us? But let's all be mad that Trump coined another bullshit term like COFEFE or alt-left when we should really be upset that he's misusing the word again. But instead of this, we're more concerned with parades over love and parenthood mistakes. Our emotions are being hijacked and used as a way to distract us to ensure that corporations are used to dangle shiny shit and convenience in front of us as they take away our rights to food and water and take over the globe using the strong arm of the military. And there is a reason why they use distraction politics and emotional manipulation and why it's so easy right now. It's because America is a teenager as a country. You know, awkward limbs, pimples, hormones, church boners. And as teenagers, we're not really taught how to deal with our emotions. We don't understand what they are. You know, we're just told to push them way down, hush up, and do your homework. Write an overly patriotic essay about why America's military is and always will be so large and great. So, when we speak out against oppression and social issues, it's the government pushing its emotions way down because it has no idea how to deal with it. Instead of a manipulative distraction, we can use these emotions as a fuel. Fuel us to figure out what the right questions to ask are and dig a little deeper about the world around us. Dig deeper as to why someone would want to control consumerism, the media, and natural food while the military takes over our government. And we're told that's a good thing. Perhaps it's to ensure that we don't control anything in our lives unless we do as we are told. And it's going to get to the point where we won't even be in control of our own emotions. And that should really piss us off. That's been your Forkful of Noodles for this week. Thank you for tuning in. We have been off for 2 weeks, and we are back at it. Sorry for the delay. Indie Fringe was fantastic, but it was a very long festival. We're very excited to be back. If you enjoyed this video, please share it with your friends, your enemies, whoever you'd like to. I am going to be performing live stand-up comedy coming up in Lansing, Michigan, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Berea, Ohio, Indianapolis, Indiana, Dayton, Ohio, and Cincinnati, Ohio. For my full tour schedule, you can check out ramennoodlescomedy.com. That's R-A-M-A-N noodlescomedy.com. I just released a new hour of stand-up comedy called Approaching Happiness. It's an hour surrounding mental illness and breaking stigmas around that and various other social issues. It's now available for download on pretty much every platform that you can find. But if you go to Bandcamp and download it from there, you can also subscribe to my Bandcamp and get unreleased material. And if you'd like to support Forkful of Noodles, the socially conscious comedy, and my podcast, Taboo Table Talk, you can donate to our Patreon at patreon.com/KrishMohan. Ha ha. You can also check out the Gumroad at gumroad.com/KrishMohan. Ha ha. Check out all the links below, and I hope to see you at a live show. Thanks for getting into it.